Today's very exciting because we have a power team of guests, all of them faculty members in the computer science department, here to talk about a range of computer science courses and also the material that you will cover in such courses as those. Think of these as teasers, perhaps, a pre-shopping period. But it's an exciting time, to be honest, to be getting involved in CS itself. The introduction of minors by the college recently has certainly generated interest in pursuing additional courses. And so even if you're not considering becoming a CS major, which most of you will not after this course, but rather are considering minoring it, or at least dabbling some more, know that there's plenty of courses after this one that you are now qualified for, including CS 51, 61, and 171, all of which we'll talk about a little bit today. And know, too, that it's an exciting time, too, because this department, CS in particular, has really grown. I mean, even since I graduated in 99, there are probably twice as many faculty members in the CS department. And in fact, two of the courses you're going to hear a little something about today didn't even exist back then. Computer Science 171, Visualization, which is all about putting to use some of the skills you've acquired in this course and would acquire in some of these other courses and using them to present interesting and particularly large data sets in compelling ways so that humans can actually make sense of what on first glance might itself be rather overwhelming.
All right, welcome. My name is Hans-Peter Pfister, as Dave said, and after listening to the previous two presentations, I'm really pumped up to take CS 51 and CS 61. I actually probably should, because I'm not such a good programmer myself. I'm a visual guy, and I'm going to teach visualization. My background is in computer graphics and computer vision. So if you look up visualization in the dictionary, you'll find actually quite useless information that doesn't relate at all to what we're going to talk about in the course. So you'll find it's about forming mental images and making things visual. You know, I'm all for the power of positive thinking, and you probably should use that for your finals. But in the class, we're actually talking about convey information through graphical means or through visual means. And so here I just show you a bunch of examples. I don't have to, I think, convince you that visualization is very important because you're actually encountering it every day. So here's just some recent examples, showing you some information about the economy, Dow Jones Index, and some other information. And you know, you can't open the paper or turn on your TV anymore without seeing some form of graph. So visualization is clearly very important, and it's prevalent. Now, it's also very old. We can go way back to the Stone Ages when people painted on cave walls. But you know, in the early or late 1800s, early 1900s, William Playfair actually invented the concept of graphs and charts. So he's responsible for inventing line graphs, bar graphs, and the infamous pie chart. And ever since, we've been using these tools to make sense of data. And it turns out that our human visual system is actually really good at making sense of data this way. It's a lot better than to looking at Excel spreadsheets. So what has changed since then? Well, the big change has really been the addition of interaction. So quite often when you do a visualization nowadays, you not only want to look at your information, but you want to interact with it. And typically that's because the visualization may bring up some interesting questions about the data that you may want to answer. So here is an example of the Dow Jones. And if I go, in this case, to the Google website, hopefully it will show me what's currently going on, and I can actually, can you see this? Yeah. I can actually zoom in here, so I have little sliders here that let me zoom in and zoom out. So I can see exactly what's going on today. I can even find information about, you know, relationship of what's going on in the market to what's happening in the world, and link directly to information that it's online. Now, this kind of interaction is extremely important, and in CS 171, you'll actually learn how to build these types of interactive visualization applications. So let's go back to the slides. Let me show you another graph. Again, this is financial information. This is from the New York Times website, and we can jump there real quick. So this shows you the amount of deficit or budget shortfall across the United States broken up by state. And, you know, one thing you may notice, first of all, you know, there's a bubble chart here overlaid on top of the map, and the size of the bubble tells you actually how big that budget shortfall is. So the bigger, the worse. And if you look at this closely, you may notice this big bubble over here, right around Massachusetts, and lo and behold, turns out we have one of the biggest budget shortfalls because of the economy right now, and we're going to be in big trouble. So you actually can drill into this data, and you can find some information related to this data using these interactive tools. Let me show you a last example. This is called the map of the market, and you may have never seen this kind of visualization before. It's called a tree map. So each square here represents a company, and the size of the square gives you an idea of their market capitalization. So the bigger the square, essentially the bigger the company. And then the companies are grouped hierarchically into different sectors of the economy. And I took this actually just a couple days ago when I was preparing my slides. So the color coding here shows you how much percentage change has there been in the value of these companies related to the previous closing of the market, right? So what you're seeing here is basically red. That tells you that that was a really bad day for the economy. So a lot of these companies, a lot of these different sectors of the economy really went into a tailspin. But what's interesting is there's a bunch of them that actually are green. And so you may want to find out why are these companies green and what kind of companies are they? And, you know, what kind of information do I need to know to maybe invest in them? So I can actually also quickly go to check what's happening today after I skip this annoying ad. I don't know how to skip it, so... Oh, here we go. So if you search for a map of the market in Google, you'll find it, and we see a much more balanced picture today. But again, what's really neat is I can hover over these different squares, and I can find out even Exxon is now making some losses here, and that's probably not good, whereas some other sectors are starting to make some minor gains again. Whereas, you know, some of these, Morgan Stanley apparently had a good day today. So these types of interactive visualizations are really becoming state-of-the-art, and again, as I said, a lot more effective than looking at rows and columns of numbers. So why do we need visualization? Well, one thing is to communicate. Here is an example of a static page that was printed in the New York Times showing you the California wildfires last year. And it actually relays a lot of information. So if you look at this, they actually show you the extent of the current wildfires compared to some previous wildfires in 2000. They give you more detailed information with a narrative to tell you exactly what's been going on in these different areas in California. And so this is really meant for a layperson who doesn't really normally read visualizations and wants to basically understand what's going on in California right now. So there is a lot of annotation and there is a lot of detail in these maps. Visualizations are extremely important to answer questions. So similar data set, this is also about the California wildfires, but if you wanted to know where is the closest shelter if I have to flee my home, the best option for you would have been to go online and then find on Google Maps that some people had produced mashups of evacuation centers, related them to different hospitals and to the areas where the wildfires were happening. So, of course, you know, you've been using maps probably very frequently already, and in CS171 we'll be talking about how do you produce these mashups in order to make those maps richer with more information that you may actually have downloaded from the internet. As I said, we can't escape maps and we can't escape visualization, so here are a bunch of recent visualizations of the presidential election and the classic red state, blue state maps. And if we compare that to what happened in 2004, we see that the landscape has a little bit changed since then. So in 2004, a lot of the newspapers printed this type of map. And when you see this, you immediately think, oh my God, you know, what kind of country are we living in? Depending if you're red or blue favorite. And so the problem with this is actually that the visualization isn't telling you the whole story. What is it not telling you? Yes, population, exactly. So, well, let's dig in a little deeper. So first of all, we find that the race was actually extremely close, right? So in the popular votes, there were only 3 million voters difference between Bush and Kerry. But if you look at the amount of area on the map, there is just a whole lot more red than blue. So we can break this down by county, and we can even shade it based on the percentage of voters that voted for one candidate or the other. But this still isn't giving you quite the right picture. And again, it's related to population. So the New York Times came up with this visualization. It actually shaded the map based on population density, so that areas that are largely unpopulated are essentially white. And I think this gives you a much better picture of how these votes were cast and doesn't look quite as dramatic as the original picture may have suggested. So what we'll look at in CS171 are all the different design techniques that we can use to convey information truthfully and to make sure that we're actually conveying the right information. Here is another example. Visualization can uncover patterns. So here, the people at New York Times plotted the different batting averages of Hank Aarons, Babe Ruth, and Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds here in red. And typically, when a baseball player gets older, their batting average starts to taper off. But if you look at Barry Bonds, all of a sudden there is this stark increase here in his performance, which is quite uncharacteristic. And it turns out that this is about the time when people suggested that he may have been using steroids. So we can uncover these type of patterns by looking at the data. Here is a nice one. This is a so-called word tree visualization that is on one of my favorite visualization sites called Many Eyes. And we will be using Many Eyes quite a bit in the class. So what this visualization shows you is the text of the Alberto Gonzalez speech when he was supposed to become, what was he supposed to become? Attorney General, thanks. So he actually, so what you're seeing here is the size of the word corresponds to the number of times that the word was mentioned in his text, in his deposition. And he used "I don't recall" a lot, obviously. So what's nice about this, we can start to drill into this. So, you know, "I don't recall the specific mention of this conversation, specific reason." So what's interesting is, based on the size of these sentences, it turns out that he actually literally used the exact same words multiple times during his deposition. And that suggests that maybe he was coached really well and started to memorize these sentences and literally verbatim repeated them during his deposition. Here is another word visualization. This is from the John McCain concession speech. And it's called a whirl. It's a funny way to display frequency of word usage in a speech. And it's become a little bit of an internet phenomenon. So a lot of people do wordles of different speeches or different types of texts. And you see he talked mainly about country campaign. What's kind of neat is if you look at this little thing, that's the only mention of Sarah Palin. So visualizations can also inspire. And we'll talk about some famous visualizations and also some recent examples where people really used visualizations to inspire. By the way, this is the same kind of visualization of Obama's acceptance speech. So what are the goals in CS171? We want to talk about what makes visualizations effective. What are the principles behind it? And we also want to give you an overview of some applications of visualizations. We'll talk about different types of applications. And more, most importantly, we want to enable you to implement your own interactive visualizations, very similar to what I've just shown you. So that will really allow you to take your programming a step further. And we're going to be using Processing, which is a Java framework, so you'll be mainly programming in Java. And we'll also be introducing Python web scraping, so you can actually scrape your own data from different websites and implement your own web crawlers. So there's three acts to the class, just like an Italian opera. Act one, foundations. So we'll talk about data models and web scraping and data mining and data reduction. Then we'll talk a lot about visual perception and cognitive principles. What does make a particular color encoding more effective than another one? We'll talk about color, as I said. Design principles. How do we maximize the information content in a visualization? And also a little bit about interaction design, talking about what kind of interactions are most useful to convey information. Act two is the broad overview of different visualizations that you might be using. Charts and graphs are very prominent because those are the most useful visualizations. Then we'll talk about maps, Google Earth, trees, networks, social networks, for example, and also higher dimensional data, text, and images, and video. And finally, Act 3, besides me dying, as in any good opera, we'll have a bunch of guest lectures. We had last year a whole bunch of people that were coming by talking about all kinds of different interesting topics. And I'm not exactly sure who's going to be able to come next year, but I can promise you I'll try my best to get the same people or a very similar set of people to come. And those talks are usually a lot of fun because you get a different perspective from some of the very famous people that are in our field. So more information on the web. Lectures are Monday, Wednesday, 1 to 2:30. All of the lectures are videotaped. They'll be actually streamed live and also archived online, so you can look at them in the convenience of your living room if you so choose to do so. And we have four homeworks, one midterm take-home exam. And the key actually is a final project that you can do either alone or in teams of two, where we ask you to choose a topic of your personal interest. Basically, ask a question about something and then go get the data and do the visualization to answer that question. And just to wrap up, I would like to show you a bunch of examples of what the students had done last year. So by the way, this is all online at cs171.org, so you can just go there and look at the final projects yourself. But Alex Chu was very interested in piano, and so he did a visualization of music. I'm just going to play this back here. So he took a MIDI file, he analyzes the MIDI file, and then he visualizes which piano keys are being pressed, and he shows you kind of the time sequence, very reminiscent of these old drum roll pianos. And what's interesting, he also implemented bar charts of frequency of key presses. This is overall over the whole piece. And then over here, it's actually grouped by octave. So he grouped all of the octaves into one in the center octave here. And you can get sort of an impression of what's going on. So I think that worked pretty well. Here is a very useful one. Samir and Jesse took the cue data and made it interactive. So I'm sure you all know about the cue guide. So you can actually go to our site, or to their site, I should say, and you can look at the cue data online. So here are all of the classes that you can take at Harvard. And let's go to computer science. Let's pick computer science 51. So this data was from 2007, I believe. So back then, Radhika was teaching CS 51. So you can look at the overall score broken down by number of people who voted per different score. Here is the rating for the teacher. Here is the rating for the readers, for the readings, sections, workload, difficulty, and so on. And then finally, recommendation, oh yeah, you really should take CS51. But what's actually really most useful, in my opinion, and probably in yours, is you can actually filter these classes based on the workload rating. So if you're really inclined to do very hard work, you might want to take Government 1000. What's really cool too is you can click on this, and now we're filtering the opposite, right? So if you want to do something really, really easy, maybe anthropology is your game. So again, you know, this interactive application is actually quite fun to play with, and I invite you to take a look. Let me just show you one more for fun. We also had Daniel. He actually was really interested through a roommate of his to look at the poetry of Emily Dickinson. And he set out to do a piece of art, essentially. He wanted to have an artistic visualization of the poetry of Emily Dickinson. And he came up with this really intricate algorithm to draw these, in my opinion, kind of beautiful pictures. And he has a nice write-up on the website. And it turns out, unfortunately, he couldn't quite connect it to the poetry. So it's a little bit more random than it is related to the poetry. But, you know, this is art, right? So I'm not going to argue with this. And I just like having this creative spirit in the class. And finally, let me show you maybe something a little more useful. So Karen Feng, she looked at different technology blocks, and she wanted to know, so, you know, these are all somehow related because a lot of these are co-owned by the same companies, right? So here is a bunch of blog articles. So each bubble here is an article, and the size of the bubble, again, gives you the frequency of the number of links to that article, right? So bigger bubbles mean articles that were more popular by number of links linked to them. And then you can actually see over here, so who on the right, you see who actually was listing that article. And you can also go over here and hover over these, and you see, for example, which articles were on Gizmodo versus Geek Sugar. So, you know, Geek Sugar had some of the less popular articles, but who knows, maybe they were a little bit more interesting. 3G iPhone to include GPS. She also did another visualization to look at the links between the different blogs. So which blog links to which other blog, and again, sorted by frequency shown here in a nice stacked bar graph. So Gizmodo had actually links to many of these other blogs, but mostly to the tech blog, and so on. So you can, you know, dig deeper into these data sets. So with that, I'd like to conclude, and I hope to see you at CS171. Don't let the one in front of the 71 scare you. It's really not such a hard class, and we really hope to see you.